is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 113, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And every Thursday I release an episode called UFO Encounters, so please check them out. If you want to hear the extended version of this interview, please join the Patreon campaign, where there are now more than 100 episodes in the back catalogue. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. This week I'm talking to Paul Blake Smith about his book, President Eisenhower's Close Encounters, an investigation into Eisenhower's secret agreement with extraterrestrials. Paul has been the featured guest on numerous radio shows. He's the author of three books on UFOs, including The Nixon-Gleason Alien Encounter and MO-41, The Bombshell Before Roswell. Hi, Paul. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, Simon.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called President Eisenhower's Close Encounters, an investigation into Eisenhower's secret agreement with extraterrestrials. For you, when did you first hear about this?
When I was younger, this story came out, I think, in the 1982 tabloid in America. And I remember reading or hearing a bit about it over the years. And I thought, this is an utterly fascinating and exciting and amazing allegation. Is there anything to this at all? And I would see it pop up over the next few decades in a chapter in a UFO book. They'd spend only a few paragraphs. I'm thinking, well, this is the most amazing story ever. A U.S. president and aliens. Where is there a book about this? So I decided, after so many years of waiting, that I would write one my own and research it on my own and put it all together. And I think I've compiled a little mountain of circumstantial evidence that I think it really did happen.
And you've done a lot of research. There's a lot of detail in the book. How long did it take you to get this all together?
A couple of years. It was one of those labors of love because it is such an enticing story. And I was researching for a number of years my first UFO story, which was about the crash in 1941 in my hometown of Cape Girardeau, Missouri. And in doing so, I would occasionally pick up a book or go to a website that mentioned the Eisenhower allegation. And I thought, more and more, this needs to be in full-length book form. So I started scribbling down notes, saving pages on the internet and such, and putting it all together. It took, like I say, years to accumulate all of this stuff. And I've been so pleased with the reaction, the reviews. I've gotten an audio book out of it, and I've got a sequel on the Nixon-Gleason alien encounter, and that's got its own audio book from Tantor.com. So I've just been thrilled with the reception, and now my agent is trying to find us a motion picture deal. It's slow going after the strike has ended here in America, and many projects are bottled up ahead of me. So we have nothing signed, and we're still keeping our eyes and ears open. I sure love to see it, as many people tell me. Love to see this on the big screen.
For the listeners who don't know, can you tell us basically what is the idea? What happened?
President Eisenhower took office in January of 1953, and after about 1 year in office, he agreed to go out to California on a golf vacation, which in itself is very suspicious because he almost always golfed just down the coast from Washington, D.C. at the Augusta National Golf Course. He played there dozens and dozens of times. They even named a tree after Eisenhower on the golf course and built him a home. It's still there to this day, the Eisenhower Cottage, they call it. That's on the Georgia-South Carolina border. So it makes very little sense for him to have to fly 2,700 miles out to Palm Springs, California, to play golf for a few days. He had just come back in February of 54 from a vacation in Georgia where he was hunting quail. So it gets more suspicious that he just happened to take off and play golf in the California desert, which was about 80, 90 miles from Edwards Air Force Base, this high security, very remote in the desert air base that features America's Flight Technology Center. It's the perfect place that you would want to meet visitors from another world, because there's going to be very, very few eyewitnesses, and visitors could come and go out of the sky as they wish without being seen by the general population, and that the military on the base would be easily hushed up, ordered to keep your mouth shut. Most of them did. A few of them, thankfully, did not. So in 1982, a story appeared in which an American test pilot in 1954 was at the meeting. And he said, "I was there. President Eisenhower did show up and spoke to the aliens after they had landed." And he says, "I want to tell this story now because I'm the last person who was present at this meeting, and I don't want the story to die out." So he told it, and it was printed up in an Inquirer, National Inquirer story, and it was picked up by other newspapers in the country and in Canada and such. It was so extraordinary. The test pilot spoke only under the condition anonymity. He never did come forward, as far as I know. I give one or two guesses as to who it could have been in my book, but frankly, I still don't know precisely to this day who that man was. But we're all grateful that he spoke up. And he said that President Eisenhower was golfing in Palm Springs at the time on February 19th, 1954, and was called away after the Air Force officials decided it's safe to come over to the airbase. "We have some VIP visitors, very important guests, who touched down on a runway near an open hangar." And apparently this was prearranged. It wasn't just an accident. There was some communication apparently with some binary code of high frequency radio waves to set up the meeting between some friendly intelligences and American military officials. So once the coast was declared clear that they were safe and friendly, Eisenhower drove and was flown out to the airbase under the cover of darkness, while the media was distracted with a party at their hotel. I think that was all part of the strategy. As I put in the book, I give a previous example of how the media was distracted and kept away from Eisenhower so he could undertake another operation before he became president, when he flew all the way to Korea and the media was taken by surprise. In that manner, President Eisenhower lived up to his promises. He showed he wasn't afraid to fly long distances to meet people under possibly dangerous circumstances. He was a war hero from World War II and combined all the Allied forces together to crush the Nazi war machine in Europe. He received a ticker tape parade when he got back. He was super popular, and he won his presidential election in a landslide. And it's important to note that Eisenhower was the first American president to hold a pilot's license. He knew all about aerodynamics and flight technology. It was his job to keep up on that sort of thing, to protect and defend America and our allies in England and elsewhere. So he was the perfect president for friendly, human-like aliens to sit down and speak to in a calm, rational manner. And according to the test pilot, that's just what happened.
And how many different sources of this kind of information did you find?
Well, I put them in my book, and the test pilot is certainly a main one. There's been a number of authors who came up with some sources that there were a couple of men on the base who later talked and said, "Yes, Eisenhower was here, and we hear it was about extraterrestrials." One of them said that we were told to go on leave, to take our possessions with us, and when we came back to the gate at Edwards Air Force Base, they told us to beat it for 48 hours and not come back for matters of security, I guess. Not everyone was told what was going to be happening. There was a sergeant who spoke to a UFO investigator named Gabriel Green and said that I was out in the desert commanding a troop of soldiers at gunnery practice. We were shooting live ammo at targets way out in the desert near the base, and we were under the command of a general that day. Well, apparently they did not get the memo either that special visitors were coming, and the general ordered the troop of soldiers to open fire on five extraterrestrial craft that came down out of the sky. And the sergeant said, to our amazement, we turned our guns on the ships and fired at them, and our mortar shells and such had no effect. Their explosives just seemed to bounce off the ships, not affect them whatsoever. And they came down out of the sky and landed silently, quietly at the base on the tarmac in front of this distant airplane hangar. And so the general ordered us to stop ceasefire and to clear out of the area. And that's another source who said this really did happen. It's not a joke.
It's fascinating that this is sort of coming together. And you also talk about how Eisenhower, he kind of knew about UFOs before all this, because you mention, an RAF bodyguard who overheard Winston Churchill discuss a UFO event?
Yes, that's become a rather famous story, too. A family of a grandfather in the family served in World War II as a bodyguard to Winston Churchill, and he told his family this story. Said, during the war, I was present bodyguarding the Prime Minister, Churchill, when he met with Dwight Eisenhower. And they're going over this report of what we call a UFO today, Foo Fighters, daylight discs, orbs at night. Whatever it was had really spooked the crew of a bomber airplane in the European theater, and they reported it, and it went up the chain of command to Churchill, and he brought it up to Eisenhower. And they talked about how this could be upsetting to people if we release this information. There's a craft, at least one or more, that are following and tagging along our airplanes over the English Channel and over England and in the European theater, all of these stories. And he said, we need to keep this quiet from the public. It might cause people to disrupt their own lives in a panic, quit the church. Both men were deeply Christian, very religious gentlemen, and they wanted to protect our basic standard mores of the era. And I wonder if some of that's still going on to this day. They're afraid that people will panic if they hear that we are being visited by a number of races. In this particular case, I think the family wrote a letter to the British government and made it public in 1999, saying that Churchill agreed with Eisenhower and that they were not going to release this information during the war. And obviously it wasn't released afterwards, but so many pilots did come forward and say we were not harassed, but followed, and we could see craft of another world, apparently, tagging along or visible in the skies during the war. So that's a fascinating story that Eisenhower knew even as of the 1940s. We are not alone.
And then Eisenhower, he saw a UFO one night when he was on an aircraft carrier.
That's right. A few years after the war, in January 1952, Eisenhower had not declared himself a candidate for president yet. He was on assignment for President Truman to monitor our preparations and readiness in case of possible war in Europe again with the Soviets. So he made a tour of military installations, and he was aboard, I believe, an aircraft carrier, the USS Franklin Roosevelt, which I believe had nuclear weapons on board. So one night he tried to sleep, and there was a big storm that was rocking the ship, I believe in the English Channel or off the coast of France, we'll say. And that a man wrote about this experience in the middle of the night. Eisenhower came up on deck to get some coffee, and he talked to the bridge crew that was working the overnight shift commanding this very large vessel. And the storm outside was raging and with lightning and thunder. And suddenly they very clearly saw this circular disc hovering over the ship. And it was apparently unaffected by the lightning, the wind, the rain. And it didn't just take off. It was there for a good 10 or 15 minutes, this man said. And we all looked in amazement with Eisenhower out the window at this hovering craft out in the middle of, you might say, nowhere in the stormy seas during January. I haven't pinned that down to exact date of 1952. The survivor of that incident wrote about the story in a 1997 New York City newspaper article and said that Eisenhower took it pretty calmly. And when the craft finally did fly away, he said, "Well, gentlemen, keep this story under your hat and I'll look into it and I'll get back to you." And he went back down below deck. And the gentleman who wrote the story, who was on that crew, said, "We never did hear back from Eisenhower. No one said anything to us, and that was that." So it's another kind of case of they were not willing to share this kind of top secret information, even with people who witnessed this and saw it in person.
And did he say anything about the craft being affected by the weather?
When I read the story, it doesn't say that the craft was affected whatsoever. You kind of wonder, well, it was soaking wet, right? Or was it buffeted by the wind? It just sort of hung there in the sky. I kind of wonder if it glowed to make it more visible. But when lightning flashed, I'm sure they could see it better. But it must have been the most extraordinary sight of their lives. As far as I know, that is the first time Eisenhower laid eyes on an otherworldly craft, and that he apparently took that pretty calmly. It's as if extraterrestrials were trying to get his attention.
Maybe they did want to meet up eventually, and they were just showing themselves. Because if somebody came to Eisenhower and said, "These aliens want to have a meeting with you down at this Air Force base," he might have said, "What are you talking about? Aliens don't exist."
Yeah. But after collecting stories almost firsthand from pilots in World War II, and then seeing this in a few years after the war, he was sort of broken in psychologically, much more prepared for this sort of thing, understanding that other beings from other worlds are curious about us and visiting, maybe monitoring our behavior. And that came out in the questioning that Eisenhower received in February of 54 at the Edwards Air Force Base encounter, in which the aliens showed that they have been monitoring what we're up to.
What type of ETs were they? Were they greys or reptilians, Nordics?
That's always a good question, and I come up with the best answer I can. Let me preface my remarks by saying in the year or two since that book came out in 2020, I've seen stories on the internet of scientists and cosmologists who very seriously theorize and forecast that and assure us there are other planet Earths in the galaxies, other planets sustaining life, you know, plant, animal, human-type forms are evolving on other planets. And they're predicting or forecasting that many of them are growing up like human beings, evolving from a more crude stage, as we supposedly have, into human form. Some of them may be behind our advanced technology and our evolvement, and others may be well beyond. But other human forms of life live on other worlds, and they may be shaped a bit differently due to atmospheric conditions, the level of oxygen or carbon in the atmosphere, et cetera. So in the Eisenhower encounter, that's what our main witness, the U.S. Air Force test pilot, said. They looked a lot like us, only a little different. He said they were slightly misshapen by our standards, but they were humanoid type aliens, not little gray beings. And he did not mention a blue skin tone or that they had bright white Nordic like hair. He certainly did not describe them as reptilian, looking like an alligator and a human bred together. However, there was a document that came out from April 1954. In the 2 months since the encounter at the Edwards Air Force Base, that got leaked a few years ago, and it's called the Special Operations Manual 101, and it's all about military intelligence officers having contact with extraterrestrial beings or crashes. And it mentions that, to the best of our knowledge, there are at least three different types coming here. And number one was mentioning these human-like beings that are just a little different, about 5 foot tall, with just a little fuzz on the top of their hair or their heads instead of hair. and maybe a slightly different skin tone, possibly grayish yellow compared to a human skin tone. And otherwise, they were well muscled, it said, but not as tall in general as we are. So that that fits with what the test pilot said, that they were a good deal like us, but I'm guessing possibly larger lungs, chest, diaphragm for breathing a slightly different atmosphere on their home world and in their ship. Maybe wider nostrils, maybe larger eyes are slightly set more apart. Just little differences, but otherwise evolved human beings from another type of planet Earth in another solar system, in another part of this galaxy or another galaxy. So it was almost like what I call a family reunion, visiting your cousins from another world.
And this document, the U.S. Army Special Operations Manual, can you be sure it's genuine? It's not a fake?
That's a good question. Back in the 50s, the U.S. War Department used to publish documents, and researchers have discovered that their printing apparatus had a raised letter Z. The Z was a little up off the line when you were typing words. That's because the letter Z was not used that often, and it would gather dust and little bits of crud underneath it, and that pushed it up on the page. Well, that's exactly what's in this special operations manual, this slightly raised Z, making it look like it sure is authentic. I haven't seen anyone come out and prove that absolutely this is fake. A number of researchers put their faith in it. It's an amazing document. Be sure to go to Ryan Wood's majesticdocuments.com to learn more about it, or you might find some pages printed up, published online. But it does mention of the three individual races that are coming here as of 54. One of them were those little grays, which were described to me as like little bio robots. They're like little clones created out of a factory. And that's apparently what crashed in Cape Girardeau in 41 and in Roswell, New Mexico in 47, that they were considered little robot slaves of a higher advanced race. Who that higher advanced race would be, I'm not sure. But that's apparently not the description of what Mr. Eisenhower meant.
And this special operations manual, it's almost like there's your disclosure right there. Why isn't the media picking up on it?
Yeah. They did a little when it first came out, but the media is so darn skeptical in our country. They just feel everything's a fake or a joke. They still make jokes like Space Cadet and flying saucers are either non-existent or explainable. We get very little cooperation from the media, and that may be because the government clamps down on these things and pressures the media to either ridicule it or not run the story. And that's one of the reasons why the Eisenhower story originally became a thing from the National Enquirer. They were willing to run UFO stories in the 1970s and 80s when almost no one else would touch them. So good for the Enquirer, which often has the scoop on news stories that are born true. And other times you find that they creatively embellish some stories at the tabloids in America. Yeah. So I feel the Eisenhower story has so much more going for it than just the Enquirer that it is authentic. It was certainly known and researched at least a little bit by the reputable Dr. J. Allen Hynek, formerly from Project Blue Book, who broke away from that government study and criticized it as a cover-up. And he said candidly, in the 1980s, the whole thing was a whitewash. They only released to the American people tales that could be easily explained as planet Venus in the sky or a balloon or a blimp or something like that. He said the best stories were kept away in a separate file when the government in America was investigating these in the 50s and 60s, and they closed the book on it during the Nixon administration in the fall of 1969. And J. Allen Hynek says, I know firsthand that we were not told the full truth, but that he said, I've been looking into the Eisenhower encounter, and that's a very interesting story. I never did find a file, if I could access, of the late Dr. Hynek's work and see what he came up with on that. But Dr. Hynek was an advisor to Steven Spielberg, the famous movie director, who put together this story called Close Encounters of the Third Kind, in which American Air Force officials at a Western desert air base welcomed these landed alien beings who were friendly and peaceful, and they welcomed them at night under the cover of darkness. And you got to wonder how much Steven Spielberg, the famous director, knew about the Eisenhower encounter, possibly from Dr. Hynek and other sources, and put almost everything into that movie except Eisenhower or a president himself. In the movie, Richard Dreyfuss manages to sneak onto the base and go up to the aircraft and see the aliens, and then he goes aboard. That was the happy Hollywood ending to the story. Apparently, none of the American Air Force officials, at least while Eisenhower were there, were given permission to board the craft, even though the aliens did invite them aboard and said, come on aboard, take a look at everything we've got. And I think Eisenhower kind of put the kibosh on that out of a kind of fear of the unknown.
So when he met them, was it like, I don't know how much detail you'll really know and how much we can know, but was it him and six other guys went up to where the ETs were standing below their craft and they had a conversation?
Yeah, the craft landed in the afternoon hours and were fired upon. And I believe there was a welcoming committee there. Since my book came out, a UFO researcher contacted me and said he heard the welcoming committee included General Nathan Twining, head of the Air Force, and former president Herbert Hoover. And I looked it up, and sure enough, Hoover was very friendly with Eisenhower, and they met a number of times. Hoover spent a lot of years in California, and he may have known all about this, but I wasn't able to get that into my book. But there was apparently a welcoming committee, mostly to make sure these guys are friendly and not like a Trojan horse that would sit down and appear friendly and actually they have weapons or had aggressive nature. Apparently they had a very friendly, open nature. They had good vibes. They didn't show any weapons at all. And that's when they placed the call to Eisenhower, come on over. They appear to be the real deal. And so Eisenhower kept himself surrounded, according to the test pilot, with six special bodyguards. And at first I thought, oh, that has to be the Secret Service, but he may not have even utilized them. It was so top secret. He may have had like one there. But I put in my book exactly who I think these people could have been, or at least without naming more than one name. According to records in Eisenhower's presidential digitized library, I come up with some pretty good suspects that I think you read about.
Did they just kind of say hello, like it's a diplomatic thing to make first contact?
Oh, I'm sure at first they extended warm greetings to each other, the aliens to Eisenhower, and right back, as you would greet maybe any other diplomat. The test pilot said the aliens spoke English, were familiar with our world and our customs, and they got down to the heart of the matter. They wanted to educate the people of Earth to their presence, and they wanted to be more visible or above board and get people on Earth used to their presence. And Eisenhower didn't care for that idea. He thought we were not ready for that. And he literally told him, our people are not ready for this in our world. I'm afraid it would cause a panic. So that plan kind of got scuttled. But the main heart of the matter is what the aliens wanted to discuss regarding the future of planet Earth and how we were imperiling it with our pollution, most particularly with our atomic bomb detonation program. It was something that Truman began in his presidency, and Eisenhower continued to set off and experiment nuclear weapons in the air, above the land, in the land, and under the sea. And it was spreading an incredible amount of contamination, pollution, creating fallout. And we were like a bunch of reckless kids playing with matches, and if not, a can of gasoline at that time. there were a lot of atomic bombs going off. We don't think of it much these days. We think of only the three or the two used in World War II, and that occasionally Russia or China will have admitted that we set one off. But America set off plenty on American soil in Nevada and Utah and out in the South Pacific. And the plan was for a test detonation in early March of 1954, and that Eisenhower was aware of that. And yet the scientists who put that together, it's called Castle Bravo, detonated that atomic bomb despite the aliens saying, we wish you would not do this. Stop doing this. Eisenhower said, I'm not going to disarm unilaterally, and I'm going to keep testing so we know exactly what we have. Well, the Castle Bravo explosion was far worse than our scientists had originally figured. It was an environmental disaster, and Japanese fishermen in the area became very sick with radiation, and I think some of them may have died. And Eisenhower had to start an apology tour after that fiasco. And this is almost as if what the aliens could foresee coming and were trying to warn him about. They asked him, please stop your nuclear bomb testing.
And was there a rumor, I think you sort of covered this in the book, that the ETs gifted one of their craft and that it was seen in a hangar?
Yes. Since my book came out, there's been a couple of stories, rumors, nothing proven, that there was already a disc at Edwards Air Force Base, a crashed disc, and that may lead to more why the aliens landed there in 54, if that's true. But at the encounter, aliens spoke to Ike and said, would you like to go inside our ships? And he said, no, thank you. But that he allowed, one story said that he allowed his men to pick up and carry one around. It was surprisingly lightweight, and they lugged it around. And it's possible that this one was gifted to us and given to us, and it sat in an Air Force hangar, seen by a number of witnesses over the decades. This sterling silver round disc, probably everything you ever imagined a UFO would look like or a flying saucer. Very, very lightweight, tough metal. Advanced craft that we apparently cannot duplicate through reverse engineering. I put that information in the book. I wish we had more data on it and photos and film, but a number of people have come forward and said that while I was at Edwards Air Force Base, I got a glimpse of this thing. So it makes you think that this is possible, that the aliens were so friendly, they gave us one of their craft to examine at our leisure.
So what else did the president talk to the ETs about? Because there's rumors that he made a deal about they would give us technology, and that would, President Eisenhower said, okay, well, you give us technology, we'll turn the blind eye while you're doing scientific experiments and even leading to abductions.
Yeah, this is where the story gets a little dark, I suppose you could say. I don't think Eisenhower would be very permissive towards allowing human beings to be abducted and probed and taken without their permission. However, he did forge an agreement, apparently, according to eyewitnesses, that he asked the aliens to not show themselves overtly, to try to keep themselves hidden when coming and going here and taking specimens and examining our plants, our animals, our human cultures, the state of our atmosphere and such. And he agreed that you could come and go here at a special base in Nevada out in the middle of the desert. And I'll get to the source for this, but in a minute. And the aliens agreed to this, but they did want to take some examinations of human beings in a maybe a rural setting. And it's kind of fuzzy what Eisenhower agreed to. Possibly that they could pick up some people as long as they didn't harm them and put them back, and made a list of who they were and handed the list over to American military officials. This may have been breached by that alien race, but I think it was breached by other races who felt this was their big opening to come in and abduct as many people as they want and treat them as rather ruthlessly as they want and hopefully put us back. Like the gray cloned alien race that you see in so many stories and so much artwork and maybe depicted in movies, that you open up a kind of Pandora's box when you let one race in and possibly others arrive, and they want the same agreement, and they want to experiment on planet Earth and see what humans are made of and how they react to circumstances. So I think the humans proved to be fairly trustworthy, the human visitors, but others maybe not so much. Now, in 2017, a document was leaked, and it was turned over to a radio show host named Heather Wade, who's now out of the paranormal hosting business. But she gave me permission to print the document in my book, all but the last six pages, which were kind of critical, were printed by my publishers. They loused up the last six pages. So it's been included in my new book, The Nixon-Gleason Alien Encounter. And it talks about the conclusions of what our military and government officials who are in the know have put together on alien visitors. The document was written in January of 1989 as the outgoing Reagan administration was about to leave Washington, D.C., and the incoming new George H.W. Bush administration was taking over. And it's certainly an eye-opening document. I believe it's the real deal. I've spoken to other UFO researchers. They feel it's real. It's got very detailed, even complicated information on a couple of incidences, but it makes clear Eisenhower did meet with aliens in 54, and then later in 54, and again in February of 55. So that's amazing data. I looked it up in Eisenhower's digitized records. Could he have been available to meet on those specific days as noted in this document? And I found out it's possible he could have. They were on weekends when the press weren't covering him all that closely, and that he had a very weak schedule with very little going on that was printed in his digitized records. And as somebody pointed out, a president can always scrub his records and try to hide certain things or fudge times and days if he wanted to, so that you would not put in there, I met with aliens at Edwards Air Force Base tonight, and I was at home playing cards with the boys in Palm Springs that night. Something like that you would put in there. You're not going to reveal all your amazing top secret information. And certainly it would not be allowed to be digitized for the public to read. It's still pretty top secret stuff to this day.
And didn't it say in that defense intelligence summary that there was an alien called Septimus that was alive?
In 1948 or 49, I forget now, the Aztec New Mexico incident featured almost an intact craft that had several bodies in a sleep state. And American scientists went into the craft and stupidly opened their apparatus, their sleep chambers, and accidentally killed all of the smaller gray type beings on board. But there were two or three human-like beings that were on board, and one of them was saved. They woke him up, managed to sustain him, and he turned out to be friendly and kindly. They interviewed him. He gave a certain amount of information, but stopped at a point because he didn't want to share too much. This is an amazing story. It occurred when Eisenhower was the Army Chief of Staff to President Truman. And it would have been another example that Eisenhower knew precisely that we are being visited by advanced alien races, and that he had possibly even spoke to them when he was Army Chief of Staff in the late 40s. This entity was taken after 1 year in American custody, I guess you would say, under protection of the military at Los Alamos and in Vermont. Of all places, there was a rural facility in the woods in Vermont where he went to stay in an appreciation of nature and was returned to New Mexico, I believe, in August of 49. And that would have been, again, with Mr. Truman as president. But who would you trust to handle such an amazing topic to keep it all classified and get all the facts, I have little doubt that Truman trusted Mr. Eisenhower to handle that operation.
There was another meeting then in 1955. Is that right? Was it Holloman Air Force Base?
Right. And there's a very fine researcher, passed away now. He's also from Missouri, like myself, named Art Campbell. And he pieced together on his own a number of witnesses who came forward to say that Eisenhower landed in Air Force One. It was called the Columbine back then, on a runway at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico, and that a number of witnesses saw him at the base, and that after a while, he got out of his plane as two circular craft came down in the New Mexico sky over the tarmac, and one remained in midair and as if protecting another one, which landed on the concrete runway, and that Eisenhower went over and spoke to the occupants of that craft. Now, that may well have been the same people who arrived in February 54. This is now February 55, almost precisely 1 year later. If there was an agreement formed, the aliens may have taken that agreement around and had other races sign onto it. And Eisenhower may have had the wording drawn up and had his military advisors and National Security Council sign onto it also. So they would have needed to hone the wording and agree to the treaty and sign it. And this would have required another encounter. And that may be what happened. It was certainly a shorter trip from Eisenhower on the American East Coast to go to New Mexico than all the way out to Edwards Air Force Base. So that's an amazing story. And it has a couple of witnesses, including a telephone repairman who was climbing up a pole at the time on the airbase. He was not informed of any presidential visit or alien encounter, and he saw the ships come down out of the sky and said he was so frightened he scooted down that telephone pole so fast it probably got splinters in his rear end. But he swore the story was true, and that's just one of the witnesses. Another one was on the base and said after the encounter, Eisenhower went into the base and gathered them in a kind of base theater and swore everyone to secrecy and said, you know, this is not to get out. This is not something the public needs to know. This never happened. And it's interesting to know that the U.S. test pilot at Edwards Air Force Base 1 year before said the same thing, that Eisenhower gathered us all together before he left the base that night and swore us to secrecy. And he said we all kept that oath, and he only broke it in around 1981 or 82 because everyone else, he found out from the encounter, was deceased. Eisenhower himself died in March of 1969, and his wife, I don't think, was ever told. She died in 1979.
I suppose if Eisenhower gets a whole load of military guys together and swears them to secrecy, being the man that he was and what he did in the Second World War, and now he's the president, there'd be a lot of respect for him.
Absolutely. First, there was a lot of respect for the military by the public and the military, of course, in those days. You didn't see protesters. You didn't have people out in the street demanding openness and no secrets. And you did your patriotic duty, especially during wartime, and you kept your mouth shut when you were told to. So this is another reason why so many of these stories remain secret for so long, till people finally start to speak out later in life. So Eisenhower commanded tremendous respect. He was tremendously popular at home and abroad, and with the general population and with the military population. So in those days, you could really clamp the lid down on some things. But fortunately, a few people did talk. It's such an amazing and exciting subject to learn that we're not alone, and we simply have to get adjusted to the fact that we're being visited and monitored, maybe even occasionally contacted by advanced races who, I think it's pretty clear, do not mean us harm. There is no invasion coming. They are curious about us and our flora and fauna and our atmosphere and how our pollution is depleting our ozone layer and causing greenhouse effect and melting our ice caps. There's never been a more fascinating time in Earth's history or in human history than the last 60, 70 years. So it does make sense to me that aliens would flit around in our skies and take samples and surveys and maybe even take a few wildlife creatures or some plants and botanical specimens and even talk to a few folks. I don't find it too far-fetched at all when you piece together everything that's going on. It's less and less stupefying and more realistic to me.
And there's rumors that there were cameras there. Was it film footage as well as still photos?
Yes, there's the stories that are floating around that Eisenhower not only knew about the meeting set up in advance, but he made sure to have at least two cameramen operating film cameras to record the big event. Now that, in theory, if he was to go public with the landing information, as he probably batted back and forth in his mind at the time, maybe I could tell people within the next 6 months that this did happen, but they eventually decided against that. He would have recorded proof of this. And if you want to be a wily politician and get reelected, you could even have the footage showing this event and say, look who aliens decided to land and speak to, me, and use it in a campaign ad if you had to. But I think it was mostly for his own protection that should something go horribly wrong, they would have it recorded and our military could study it if they had the film recovered. Now, according to one source, the aliens put on an air show for Eisenhower to show what our craft can do for the president. So our meaning the alien advanced spacecraft. During this flight, one of them passed by the airplane hangar too closely, and the technology clashed with the technology in one of the cameras recording the event and shorted it out, and the footage stops abruptly there. The one footage was in black and white, and another footage was taken in color, from what I'm told. There's a reporter in Italy who covers the Vatican named Cristofaro Barbato. And he reported that his Vatican source says this story is true, that there is footage that the Vatican either owns or has seen members, high-ranking members of the Catholic Church, the Pope maybe, and any trusted members under him have this footage of color images of Eisenhower standing at the base airplane hangar right near the edge or the lip of the airfield, greeting and speaking to extraterrestrial visitors, and that it's obvious that at least two different cameras recorded this event. And I think the whole thing does make a perfect amount of sense. As I put in my book, newspapers reported during the Palm Springs visit, there's an Eisenhower lookalike here in town, and we've seen him at a restaurant and out and about, and he was a filmmaker. So that guy could have come in super handy in two reasons: to act as a possible decoy for Eisenhower if he wanted to, and to have his film crew there to record the big event for history. Would I like to see that footage? You bet everyone on Earth would like to see that footage. I wish the government would release it, or someone would leak it within the government, or somebody outside the government would hack into it. But so far, it remains an exciting, intriguing mystery.
In the book, you mention at the beginning, I think you say there are inaccurate conspiracy theories. But what's the craziest stuff you've heard about this?
Oh, that the aliens were vicious and wanted to abduct us. There's an American TV show called American Horror Story, which fictionally depicted the event in which the aliens had sexual relations with Americans and somebody's brains exploded. Just horrible stuff. They just made a mess of the whole story. But that's one conspiracy theory, that the aliens were somehow secretly evil or tricked Eisenhower into agreeing to something, and that they were reptilians who bit into us or some nonsense. You can see all kinds of creative fictionalizing and embellishing of this. You have to be careful what you believe in. But it's hardly alone. A lot of UFO stories get picked up on by creative artists, shall we say, who want to inject themselves in the story, or they heard the wildest rumor and they report it as fact without 1 ounce of resourcing or backing it up.
So you also mentioned Edward Ruppelt typed up a memo about the rumors of Eisenhower's visit, but that memo was lost, was it? That it was unearthed decades later?
Yeah, and that he mentioned that in this letter, he said, I'll go back and tell people that Edward Ruppelt was like, I think, a colonel at the time, and he was helping to run Project Blue Book. He was assigned to start recording information on UFO sightings around the country. And even he wrote at the time of 54, he said, I've heard this rumor that President Eisenhower met with these extraterrestrials. And he was asking someone higher up in the letter, is this true? So Ruppelt was not informed at the time. And even he had heard the whispers and wanted to know more. Yeah, by the way, he just happens to drop dead of a heart attack, supposedly, a few years after that. Sounds rather suspicious to me.
Even mentioned Shirley MacLaine and some inside knowledge she might have. Was it Professor Sagdeev?
Yes, it's difficult to pronounce, but she has heard from a couple of sources the Eisenhower encounter did happen. It was a serious, real thing, as I keep finding over and over. And she even spoke about Dwight Eisenhower's granddaughter is married to a Russian scientist who worked in the Russian cosmonaut program. And even he told her that the contact has been made. And of course, Eisenhower's great-granddaughter is Laura Eisenhower. And she, of course, says this story did happen. So it's tough to keep saying, oh, this is nonsense. This never happened. When so many sources say, yes, it did. It was the genuine article. And no one was hurt, and that it was repeated in Holloman the following year. And I put in my book other possible encounters with other U.S. presidents in the decades after that. Those stories are a little more fuzzy without as many resources. But you can piece together some things with digitized presidential records, and you can sort the wheat from the chaff in those allegations.
And you mentioned the MJ-12 documents in the book as well. And I was wondering what you think of them, because there's a lot of people who say they're fakes. And I heard, I think it was maybe Richard Dolan was saying he thinks some of the pages, maybe just the original six pages are okay, but the rest of it's fake. What do you think of the MJ-12 documents?
The original documents called the Eisenhower briefing documents may well have been fake. I don't think we'll know for sure in our lifetime, but there's a number of possible flaws in them. However, a number of MJ-12 documents have come out separate from that in the years since. I've talked to some researchers who believe they are true. They've done the provenance. They've tried to examine the documents themselves and the typeset and the information. They look it over very carefully. Again, go to majesticdocuments.com. There's a researcher named Richard Geldreich who's looked into them very extensively. He feels some of them are quite valid, that President Truman did form a special committee of 12 people to look into alien presence on planet Earth. And part of that could have included communications programs that could have led to the Eisenhower encounter in 54 and 55.
We've been talking about your book. It's President Eisenhower's Close Encounters, an investigation into Eisenhower's secret agreement with extraterrestrials. And people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
That's right. You can get it on Amazon or in a very fine reading in an audio book form from Tantor.com. And of course, the sequel talks about Eisenhower's vice president, Nixon, and what he knew and what he may have done as president in the Nixon-Gleason alien encounter. I wish I had more on Ronald Reagan. I'm piecing together stuff on him. Maybe make my books a trilogy.
Do you have a website?
Yes, I do, but it's not much, and I need to work on this thing. It's www.mo41.info. It doesn't tell you a whole lot. I really need to hire a professional or somebody to help me with that. So I would just go to amazon.com and order the book and give it a fair shake. I think if you read it open-mindedly and read all the various sources and data that happened, I think I could convince you.
Well, thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it, and I hope your audience enjoys hearing it and reading the book.
And that was an interview with Paul Blake Smith about his book, President Eisenhower's Close Encounters, an investigation into Eisenhower's secret agreement with extraterrestrials. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can hear the extended version of the episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. If you join the $2 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. If you join the $5 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. And when you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called Our Paranormal Afterlife, and there are over 300 episodes. On Our Paranormal Afterlife, I look into evidence for afterlife such as near-death experiences, children with past life memories, mediumship, deathbed visions, and other phenomena. I also release an extra episode of Our Paranormal Afterlife every Thursday. That's called Paranormal Stories. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. And in my work as a clinical hypnotherapist, I take people through past life regression. And when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me, and you've signed up to Patreon, you get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call, which can be booked on my website. My Instagram is ourparanormalafterlife with an underscore between each word. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. What you talked about before, about the case for a crash in Missouri in 1941?
Right. Back in those days, Eisenhower was based out of an Air Force base in Washington State near Tacoma. He was a colonel.